Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Listen!
Explore distant galaxies. Meet strange alien beings. See if you can get them to bone you after 8 or 9 conversations, that'll do it. It's that ass effect that gets my mass erect. One-upsmanship. That pun was not bad.
I liked it.
Fly.
Yeah. I was in on that.
I'm Michael Swaim.
I'm Adam Ganser on the pun voyage with you, sir.
That's right. Pun voyage. And this is one UPS-manship.
Yeah.
Which I still insist is a word, just the PS-manship. And we talk about video games on this podcast. You probably know that. In case you don't, now you do. Today, we're specifically talking Mass Effect, and we have no guest, which we do about half the time. So it's just Adam and I locking horns over. Yeah, that's right. Mass Effect. Mass Effect 1. And in case you don't know anything about that or what that means, let's pass our first checkpoint, hey?
Hey.
And that brings us to our initial segment, something called Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit. I want to nominate you, Adam, because of the alternating nature of human conversation.
Okay.
Would you want to tell me like I'm 8-Bit?
I can tell you as though you were 8-Bit, absolutely.
Right. What's Mass Effect?
Mass Effect is the much-beloved first entry into what is now a 4-part series, though soon to be a 5-part series, by BioWare. A developer famous for, if I'm not mistaken, Knights of the Old Republic and also Dragon Age and others. So they're in
Jade Empire.
Jade Empire, that's the one I haven't played. So many, many famous RPGs. This is, I think, probably their most famous one or most popular one, though that's disputable. It was launched in, I believe, 2007. I'm looking that up. Yes, 2007. It was an Xbox 360 exclusive, a fact that blew my mind. In this, you play Commander Shepard, a character, a human being who can be whatever race or gender, race or gender that you choose. Hashtag FemShep forever. And you are the leader of a tiny little group of space explorers who sort of unwittingly uncover an ancient technological, you uncover evidence of the Prothean race, right? And you're uncovering artifacts that are sort of telling us about this race of forerunning people who died and we don't know why. And you're sort of charged with finding out, one, what is that all about? And then two, why one of the leaders of the Spectre group, which is sort of a like a CIA for the Galactic Council, like that kind of a person, why that person has turned.
Militant UN.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, that's right. Has turned and become sort of an agent of evil, right? And you're sort of investigating why that's happening. And, you know, just sort of journeying throughout the known Milky Way universe, encountering different races, learning the sort of ropes of this universe. And it's largely dialogue driven. There is some combat. It's like a 3D, like a third person combat experience, though less here than in subsequent entries. And it matters that it's part of a three-part, really, franchise, even though there's a fourth entry in a different galaxy, because the premise of this game is that your choices in it will ultimately determine all the outcomes that resolve in Mass Effect 3. That was what was promised when this game came out. It was wildly popular, and it's been reissued as recently as last year in a collection that I believe is called the Legendary Collection. Have I missed anything, Mike?
Mass Effect, like the power.
Oh, yes.
That's all.
Forgive me.
Yeah, everyone has telekinetic abilities based on this new principle of science that's been discovered called the Mass Effect and controlling it.
Right.
It's like the combat's a mix of shooting and psychic
they
shit.
They explain this. It's actually an important part of the story that human beings discovered this technology called Mass Effect Relays, which allowed them to sort of do actual interstellar exploration, a thing that was impossible for them. And that brought them into contact with all these various alien races who also discovered that technology, though at different times. And it turns out that technology is part of a much larger story that unfolds over both all the subsequent entries. So, and that's it.
That's it. You clean them out. Which brings us to our next segment, so we have to pass another checkpoint. And this game means...
You're zipping to another planet and deciding, do you need to probe for Ezo with your Mako?
Great. Really right? Saved my ass on that one. Thank you. And now I believe it's my turn.
Yeah.
For a rant. Okay, great.
Right.
Continuing to alternate the conch. Michael Swain, player one, plugging in. On a fresh replay of this game, which I just did for the purposes of this episode, using Legendary Edition, I thought it averaged out to being fine, less good than I remembered, kind of underwhelming. But there's a ton to unpack there, because I think the average of fine comes from a bunch of very specific highs and lows. It's not like it's fine the whole time. There are great parts, and there are parts I really don't care about. Also think that something fundamental to this is, or a huge thing that unlocked for me, is I think, and I could be way off base because I don't know what Adam's take is going to be, but I think Adam really likes this game. And to people who really like this game, I don't want to steal any of that joy away. I think this is how you might feel when you play Fallout, because to me this felt like an invitation to a network of ideas, but the gameplay is so not there yet. Like, obviously clunky and repetitive, like buildings being copy-pasted the same. Like, you'd fight, you know, aliens in the same building, identical building 50 times. Whoever's selling elevators and door technologies in this galaxy, they have a monopoly. Everything is architecturally exactly the same, no matter you go in the universe. So there's all this, like, just, I feel like, patched together clunkiness. And what you really want to do is it plays in your brain space. And Fallout has been accused on this series of being like a fun spreadsheet with a bunch of great ideas, but connected to like something really clunky. And I really find Mass Effect really clunky, much more so than I recall. And then when you strip away, to me, that the Prothean precursor race, there's these giant structures we discovered in space thing, is just Halo. That's Halo, motherfucker. Doing Halo again.
Wow.
You can't, that's so, it's like, so I just don't think it has much to it, in much spark as I remember, other than the dialogue tree and the decision tree. And I don't know how we don't get into 2 and 3, but I do think you have to judge that effort based on where that led. And I'm especially saying that because I also just replayed a Telltale game that we're going to cover soon. And that showed me how we grow in terms of decision-making trees, dialogue-driven decision-making trees. So there's amazing things like Mass Effect Well, that's a positive and that's a double-edged sword too. Okay, I'll bring that up later. But I guess my point is, I think we need Mass Effect. It's in the chain of there's technologies at play and things that happen that, and I'll say I have a lot of fun with it if I pretend it's a Star Trek game, which it almost is trying to be. But the downside with that is that Shepard has many, many guns strapped to them at all times. So it's like if Star Trek was Top Gun, like propaganda for the military. And that's less fun to me than like a diplomatic, thoughtful Star Trek simulator, like a No Man's Sky or an Escape Velocity, or hopefully Starfield, knock on wood. But yeah, you know what? I talked myself down from fine to I don't really like it. I don't think it's
wow.
End
wow. Wow. That's a very surprising rant. Okay. Second player, Adam Ganser, coming on. Wow. I really thought that you would like this game more than that. So I've played this game twice. I played it pretty close to when it came out in 2008. And I played it again very recently in the Legendary Collection. It's really clunky. I completely agree. Even with like remastered features and better, like they fixed the Mako, which is bad. And they fixed some of the textures and surfaces and stuff. It's still pretty clunky. I actually think out of all three of them, this is the closest to Star Trek, which is why I kind of thought you might like it better. Because it's there's a lot more sort of like discovering and understanding and empathizing with different alien points of view. Now, I'm going to contrast with you and say I do like the aliens and the races that they've introduced. I think they're interesting. They're all a little one note, which is a problem with every single space thing. As a person who's watched some of most of them, it falls into what I'll call the Babylon 5 trap of, you know, sort of reducing most of the races to, you know, basic recognizable human civilizations. But I still think they're interesting and fun. And I think there's a few that were very surprising and felt legitimately alien, like the Elcor or the Hanar. I also think that before we get too down on this is just Halo, motherfucker, I want to say I think the Reaper plant, like the plot of there's an ancient race of machines that destroys all of basically galactic civilization on repeat every 100,000 years or million years or whatever it is, or 100 million years, is an interesting plot. I liked it. This game did a great job of introducing that.
What the Halo Array does to eliminate the Flood every 100,000 years?
No, it's not a repetitive cyclical action that has thought behind it. That was literally a desperate resort to eliminate things for food, which I know seems like an arbitrary distinction, but I don't think it is.
It seems like a fine detail level distinction. I'm saying the broad swaths of the plots are still pretty similar.
I get it, and yet this is still my rant, sir, so I will ask you to curtail your remarks.
That rhymes with Ganser.
You're not wrong. I think that's true. I think that those details do change pretty dramatically how we feel about it. There's also just a couple of ideas in the game that I think are really great for video games. Here's one of them. I think the genophage conversation is a really interesting and done well through line in all three of the games that gets brought up here. And they have great introductions into some of these races that feel very like, here's the one way that the Asari are, here's the one way that that the Krogan are, and so on. And then you meet a character who sort of undermines your judgments about the races, and I think that's really clever. And they did that very subtly, and some of these characters that you end up traveling with really help, I'm going to use the word humanize, or help you empathize with, you know, the different nuances of the galaxy. And this is a pretty rich galaxy, really, for a fairly new IP. So I liked that about it. The combat's bad. It's not that good. Even with the fixes in Legendary Edition, it's not that good. The frog-like Geth that you're shooting are just like, what? I did respect what they ended up doing with the Geth in the series, but in this outing, it's not so good. But I am just shocked that you did not find anything interesting about Like some of the plots, like the Thorian, that's kind of a fun science fiction idea, or the Rachni Queen, or just, you know, various checkpoints in this game that are like, those are really cool stories that you get to interact with. But I 100% agree with you. The interactivity piece of it, the game piece of it, is not there yet. Also, this is some of my favorite music in any video game. That is my rant.
And that is how we leave you for this first portion of One-Upsmanship. We'll be back on the other side of a quick break to respond to things. We hope you'll join us.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Response is incoming. Acting is reacting, and so on. No, this is Game On, so pass a checkpoint. Blink, blink, blink. But this is where we just get to chat willy-nilly, which is my favorite portion of the podcast. It's a good conversation tree. I don't want to take that away from it. Like, all the dialogue, like, it's a great, very robust dialogue tree, well-acted. And I like the race concept, the concepts for the aliens, for sure. Thorian Queen's all right, too. But the broads, the A plot to me was just very, very uninteresting. Something's going to come and kill the whole galaxy.
Really? Okay. When did you play this for the first time?
I was probably like 18, 19.
And had you already encountered that kind of story structure in fiction and stuff at that point?
Yeah. I mean, definitely, because I was a sci-fi novel and short story junkie. That's a pretty common thing just throughout sci-fi.
That makes sense. Yeah, it was a relatively new idea to me when I played it for the first
time. And I didn't play it right when it came out, so. Yeah, I waited. Or I think in college I played it. But beyond that, I want to, like, give it props for this. I'll say this for BioWare. KOTOR completely works on me. And I suspect it's, I don't know, I haven't played it recently enough to be sure, but I suspect the combat's also somewhat clunky. But I think the difference is that the reason I go to sci-fi is for concept. So I tend to focus on what is the story, what is the concept, what are we doing here, what is the twist, what is the conceit. And fantasy, which I think Star Wars is a fantasy, not a sci-fi.
Right.
And we don't have to go into why, but I just think that's apparent. Is I go there for the setting. And Star Wars is a great fantasy setting. Very rich, very fun to imagine yourself living in that world. My favorite moments in this were probably walking around the Normandy and living in that world and talking to the crew, for sure.
Of course.
And developing the dialogue trees.
But to be clear, that's the best part of every Mass Effect game.
Yeah.
Like I think like so most people are going to argue, and I don't want to put that out there for a long discussion. Most people will argue that Mass Effect 2 is the best game of this franchise, mm-hmm. and I totally understand why. And one reason for that, though, that bears on what you're saying is Mass Effect 2 spent a lot more energy on making you bond emotionally with all of your companions on the ship. Mm. Right? Like, they weren't just part of the plot or thought experiments or just sort of like NPCs that you checked in with from time to time. Like, you went on missions to really get involved in their lives in a much more robust way than you do in this game. And I think that makes a big difference to how you perceive their plots and stories and stuff. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to point that out now because I think that's an important distinction.
Yeah. I'll tell you where it lost me at the plot level. Do you remember right after you meet with the council and then assassins try to kill you outside that bar?
Yes.
That's down the street from the council?
Yes.
And they're dressed in Saren's signature armor?
Right.
Go back okay. to the council with their bodies, you right. idiot. And say, right. now we have the proof. But instead you go on this whole side quest to prove Saren's involved. It's like, I don't know. There's just an inherent, I feel like, jerry-rigged feeling to the game, which is yeah. funny because it's considered such a legendary foundational game. And I think that really comes from and goes to show how much giving characters three-dimensional, rounded, like that's a triumph in and of itself, and that captured people's imaginations. Because I cannot detract from the fact that I like the characters and they're genuinely interesting. And like the genophage and convincing your Krogan crewman not to snap or not to is definitely the most memorable, one of the most memorable like decision points in the game for me.
100%.
And I'm so behind the concept of what this game is. Like, I'll always play every Star Trek simulator, which is essentially like this is taking a swipe at some of the elements that are near and dear to Trek fans. And, you know, flying around, a wonder and awe and exploring. I just think with a modern critical eye, it kind of falls apart. Did you ever read the lore, for example, of a planet that you scanned that yeah. you couldn't land on? You sat and yes. read that lore? That's interesting to me.
Well, I did. Okay, so I was much more eager to get really soaked into this the first time I played it. The second mm-hmm. time I played it, I played all three games basically back to back to back. Mm-hmm. So I got a little bit more in a rush through Mass Effect 1 after about 5 hours. It's like, okay, I don't need to. Some of this is kind of dull and extraneous. Although, it doesn't add a lot of emotional content. If that's your critique, I'm happy to like high five you and say, my man, because I agree with you on that. It's mostly just like, this planet is mostly made of frozen, you know, carbide, and it was briefly settled by this group, and you know, it's like I don't care about that. That's a valid critique if that's what you're about to say.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay,
I also don't have to. I like talking about where it led and what you got out of it. So.
What
captured your imagination while you were playing this, or if you have a separate point, go for it.
Well, I want to get out there and sort of acknowledge the parts we both agree on that really matter. So one is there's so much more repetition of environment and of gameplay loops in this game than really any game I can remember from even its own time.
Oh, okay, we are doing this. Okay, great.
I'm sorry, right? There's a lot of that.
We're doing
game.
The clunkiness beat by beat. I will say, like, the fact that on Ilos, one of the final areas, there's a point where the way you're supposed to proceed is to drive all the way back this long hallway that you just came down is an almost unforgivable design choice, like a game-breaking design choice to me. What is the point of that? It's right. awful. Elements like that. When you finally realize that your Mass Effect abilities are almost pointless, like you can just shoot everyone in the head and move on.
In this game, they don't contribute as much. They fixed
that. Got better. That did get better and better.
It got way better by 3. It got a lot better in 2, but it was definitely not thought through here.
Since you haven't played it, I wonder if unless I'm misremembering and I haven't played it in a long time, I think Jade Empire actually is very good, or the combat feels very dynamic. So I do think they worked toward that. And so judging Mass Effect 1 through modern eyes, a harsh exercise. Like, let's not neglect to say that. But you were saying about the guns.
Well, I just So I am of the opinion that a game like this does need guns to be interesting. Because I don't think just kind of doing the delegate thing, like I don't think if it was pure Star Trek with no combat at all, that it would be a more interesting game. I do think the dialogue pieces are far and away the best pieces of the game, but I think there's a reason why the game designers in sequels were like, okay, we really got to fix the combat, because the combat does matter, and it does add a new loop that makes it more fun. I think maybe just for the variety of it, it needed to be more fun. I mentioned that because, so like, because it, the powers don't really impact the game as much as they do later on, the guns should therefore be, you know, cool, like what a cool set of weapons, and they're really rudimentary here. Like, even the names of them are really rudimentary. You just get, like, the upgraded version, part 5, part 6,
pistol,
and stuff.
Shotgun, assault rifle, pulse rifle, yeah, 1, 2, 3, it, 4, 5, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, they really complexified the way the combat works in subsequent games, and yet they simplified some of the upgrading systems. So, like, they definitely thought some things were too complex, like how you upgrade your stats and stuff. Like, that got simpler every game. It was the most complicated here. But then things like how do you modify your weapons and stuff got more intricate as time went on. So maybe that's just they concluded this needs to be more of an action game franchise than it is, right? Because 2 is much more of a Star Wars type game than this is. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah,
In terms of it being an adventure, like, you know, discovering stuff in the galaxy, right? It's more like that.
My mind's just wandering around like other... I don't need to push back on because you can have your opinion, but I think I disagree about, I would totally take a version of this without combat at all, which I do think is like a Telltale game is a proof of concept of what that would be. And it works great.
Okay.
Where like, and Star Trek has some shootouts, but very sparingly, the main form of combat is like you get in a fist fight, they knock you out. You know, it's still a story beat. It's not a gameplay beat. And I love stuff like that. I also feel like, the shooting in Fallout, like I'm replaying Fallout 4 now, and there's a point at which, for me, the shooting feels like the baggage thing that I'm just doing to get through, to get to the next story decision-making beat, which is what is actually still giving me endorphins. Like the shooting loses its ability to, I don't know, give me any kind of satisfaction after like hour 30. And
makes sense.
I mean, I might just be a dyed-in-the-wool story guy and that's that, but I will say, if you were going to try and say, no, we want a combat loop, we also really think that's a key part of our universe and that makes it interesting. I wonder if like an XCOM style would work more I don't know. Mass Effect did this. And we should talk about this. It really did invent or popularize for the first time, right? The real-time 3D third-person combat where you stop down and freeze time, you issue orders, and then you press play again. So like, I'm not diminishing that. It's great that they're doing something completely new. They were trying to parse time in a new way. It almost reminds me of when FF7 added the action bar that fills with time. You know, Final Fantasy famously is always changing how turn-based works. And this sort of reconceptualized how real-time combat works. And it wasn't fun to me, it doesn't make that not an important technological innovation that led to other better games. You know what I mean?
I would say it actually overhauled not only that, but also the way dialogue systems work.
Yes.
Like
completely.
So it is a real innovator on that pathway for RPGs.
And there's a reason I keep bringing up Telltale. They use the exact same dialogue system Mass Effect invented. Yeah.
And they do it a little better. They do it a little bit better because they've had, you know, years to evolve.
Exactly.
But I can tell you that in 2007, this game was nowhere near as boring as it is now. Like, it's definitely dull a little bit now compared to what it was. And I think that says how important it was as a landmark, right? Like, because everybody took from it. Most RPG stuff that's team-based is more like Mass Effect than it is like, I don't know, a JRPG or a turn-based, right?
So
almost
you're saying,
everybody's
yeah,
doing
ultimately,
stuff like that.
Ultimately, it's boring because everyone honed these elements because they were so good.
Yeah, I think so. And also, that's part of it. And because it's in that period of time where video games are really sort of like there's a bunch of new ideas for video games being explored, like in that 5-year window between like 2005 and 10, there's so many new ideas that became like juggernaut IPs Mm-hmm. And so, but they're all a little bit rudimentary. You know what I mean? Like the first Assassin's Creed, you know? And we can go on and list them all, but you get the idea. This is like that, like some new ideas.
Assassin's Creed at all.
Yeah. This is a new idea, and it is very exciting because I like it.
I remember being excited when I played it in college. I liked it much better.
Right.
So I do think the way in which I don't like it is the way in which I could watch a black and white movie and go, I get why it's good, but that was whatever.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's a good, I like that as a way of being honest about
it. It's an emotional analog. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I dig that. Cause I totally agree with you. So, I mean, that covers to me the things that are frustrating about it. There are some things that I think are still pretty transcendent that I would be happy to point out if you're willing to move on.
Well, in the spirit of organization's sake, then I want to finish my frustrations.
Great. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
There's only a couple big ones. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The Citadel had several quality of life enhancements that obviously needed to be made. Like,
yes.
You should have unlimited sprint in the Citadel. It's interesting that you can't crouch in the Citadel, can fire wildly into a crowd of civilians in the Citadel, but nothing happens. So just like these things that are, you accept because it's an old game, well, it wasn't at that level of realism yet, right? They didn't program civilian gets hit animation. They just, you know, it's like, it just wasn't time for that. Yeah, we mentioned backtracking and repeating. And that's all fine. I think it's funny to imagine them actually physically riding in the Mako. Like, you would be liquefied, dude.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's just no surviving that.
It's the Mako's silly.
That's acceptable. That's just a silly gameplay choice for sure.
But the Mako is silly. Like, it's very silly. Like, so they added an expansion to, I want to say it's Mass Effect 3, where they brought back Mako-like missions, but you're in like a hovercraft kind of thing.
I think it's like an Andromeda, right?
Well, it's probably in both. There was an expansion to Mass Effect 3 that did it. And it's just so much better, and it just makes more sense. You know what I mean? It's like you're just not having fun doing the Mako stuff. And it's weird to me that nobody sensed that when they were building this game out.
So it's weird how almost every button on your controller when you're in the Citadel draws your weapon, which you never want to do in a social situation. Last but not least, but my biggest one actually is, did you find yourself constantly auto-selecting dialogue that you didn't mean to because you were trying to skip through the dialogue at a
on occasion
pace and then hit one too many times? All right,
on occasion.
I'm out. What's great about it?
That's great. And actually, I'm sorry. I realized I had two critiques that needed to be mentioned. So one of them is, and this is a big one, I think the decision at the end that you're making to either attack Sovereign, the Reaper ship, or save the Council needed to be way more important in the franchise than it was.
What did you do, by the way?
I attacked Sovereign. I was like, let's blow up the Council. They're a pain
the
in the dick.
Council were a-holes.
Yeah.
Totally.
They're a pain. And like, not for racist reasons, just for like, these guys suck. Like, they don't care. And it didn't really matter in subsequent games. Like, no matter which version of that, that's a huge betrayal, because the offer there is like, you're going to dramatically change the fate of the galaxy at the end of this game. And then you don't. So that kind of sucks, man. I think that's a problem.
Red, blue, or green light, baby.
Well, right. So, and of course, that's a foreshadowing of the ultimate problem with this game. And also creates, I think, a big problem with Mass Effect 2, which is they have to basically reboot everything to fix that. So there's that.
Right.
I also think while I think it matters, I thought the way that they were doing one character is just super specious was a little dull. You know what I mean? Like, I thought, like,
basic.
Yeah, it was just a little basic. That's really what it was. It's not that there wouldn't be specious. I, for instance, think the elusive man's speciesism is interesting, and I believe it in the sense that
Jordan Peterson speciesism. It's like disguised as intellectual.
That's right. Yeah, but I think that makes sense for a spacefaring.
Totally.
Ashley's character was like just kind of shitty because of that. It was like, well, we've really reduced her to I hate all aliens, and it's like, I don't know, you know that. So that I found that a little disappointing. Does it exist in the future? Probably, man. But I still think it's a little boring as a story choice.
Man, the idea that we will get to the future and learn how to explore space, and there will still just be wars to fight is exhausting to me.
Like, well, buddy,
profoundly depressing. I would like to think that if your race reaches that technological level, your spiritual evolution has to have caught up to some degree, to the point that if you meet aliens from interstellar space, I'd expect them to be chill as hell, because, you know, I don't know. I feel like those go together.
That's so funny. I think it fundamentally, it's really an abstraction of your worldview on human beings. It all is, right? Do you believe that the problems of human beings are extrinsic to them? Or do you think that we're carrying around the seeds of our darkness inside us? Because I think the second.
Or is it...
You know?
Or is it... I guess, is this the first one I'm saying? Or is it a fact of life? Like, some people would just make the argument, well, any self... self-interested creature that's left in a limited pool of resources will ultimately have to resort to violence. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's like the nature of the situation, right? That's sort of a third argument.
They kind of lean into that a bit too. That is a justification they have largely for a lot of the conflicts in the galaxy. In particular, I think the First Contact War between the Turians and the humans seems like it's mostly about two races that are like mentally incompatible. Right. Like they don't have a legitimate huge gripe with each other. They're just like incompatible, you know? And I think that was interesting, but then they also have races that are clearly just bad guys. You know what I mean? And that's like a dumb problem for this
galaxy.
That's
what I mean. And I guess, why would you just be like a loud, mean asshole?
Right.
If your race is so advanced that you have interstellar travel, like, you don't need to prove shit at that point.
Yeah. Why are the Batarians the way they are, or the Vorcha, which I know they exist more in Mass Effect 2. But like, there are some races that they're sort of afterthoughts, and they don't have the complexity. Yeah.
Well, in case anyone listening is interested, for the record, I do believe the first thing, which is that anything is malleable and that human behavior could be molded toward.
I love that.
Blah, blah, blah. So
I know
that's why I'm a Trek fan. I believe in Gene Roddenberry's vision of, yeah, as the future goes, we get better and better. I just don't think that our spirits are evolving at the same rate. As, you know, I think Einstein pointed out, we're not going, or maybe Sagan, we're not evolving. Our spirits aren't evolving fast enough to match the technological ability to destroy each other. But I do believe that our spirits evolve, or to put it in more scientific terms, that we get better and better at self-domestication. We make ourselves less objectionable and more cooperative over time because it's beneficial to be so. And I would like to think that by the time we have interstellar travel, we would be like the fucking Federation. We'd be like, yeah, there's some assholes, but most people are pretty chill, you know?
Well, so, but what's interesting is, so then this game kind of makes humanity into the spoiled rich kid version of a race, because they discover power they don't actually... they couldn't arrive at themselves, right?
But the whole everyone's guilty of that, right?
Yeah,
that's
the whole
galaxy.
Well, and so, but that might still actually validate your theory to some degree, which is that the technology is actually beyond their capacity.
The Mass Effect, the arrays, it was too soon for us to get those.
Right.
Yeah,
we're drunk
on it.
And then you have this, like, and then so that's where the Reapers become this sort of like Edenic, mythic figure. Of sort of like, we're sorry, but you weren't ready to eat from the knowledge of good and evil, so therefore we must destroy
you. Right.
You know,
and
like,
what would that analog be in the Bible? The flood. And what are the enemies of Halo called? The flood.
I agree. Fair enough. I'm happy to accept your critique there. But I'll tell you, as a person who didn't read that many science fiction novels, I liked it. I thought it was interesting. I didn't think it was like the best thing ever. I also think they did a pretty good job with the stakes of that as the series wore on.
As far as things that are sci-fi staples that are like destined to cyclically kill us all and end existence, are you aware of the Shrike from the Hyperion Cantos?
No.
That's the real shit, my friend.
Okay,
the fucking Shrike.
That's a cool name.
Out there just got really excited. Yeah, the thorn tree, the living death.
That's
anyway.
Well, so isn't the Thorian a little bit of a nod at that? The Thorian character?
As I said, I like the Thorian. The thing that ruined the Thorian sequence for me was the combat. For whatever reason, right. I don't know if I didn't have enough supplies stocked, or tell me if you had this issue, but I died 6 times climbing the stairs up to fight the Thorian, and it drained all fun out. It was like a 25-minute sequence of going upstairs and shooting little pods, and I just kept dying. And I was like, well, I'm over this. Because of the frustration of the gameplay element, the plot was cool. It was a little, Invasion of the Body Snatchers riff.
Right. And that was fine cute. With that. Yeah, I liked it. I guess if I was going to be really harsh, which is unfair, but if I was going to be really harsh, I would say I didn't care that much about the second act of this game. Like, I liked the setup of it a lot, the first act, and like what you're like, you know, discovering the Promethean stuff and Saren and his betrayal and like the council. That stuff was all interesting. Then the gathering facts, which is, you know, most of the game, was fine. It was a little bit more of a potpourri experience of different little nooks and crannies of the galaxy that bring out some conflicts that are cool, but they weren't. Yeah. But it did feel like you're not getting that much rewarding emotional material out of this. And then the end was good again. Like, I enjoyed the third act and how it all wrapped up. So I know that's a little harsh because it's most of the game.
I thought fighting Saren was a little rote. He's a cyborg fighting, zombie that the hops fighting around was like a frog.
Yeah, the frog stuff, they got rid of it after this game, and it was not good. I didn't like the combat. But I liked Saren as a character, right? I thought he was interesting.
He's serviceable.
Yeah.
Smug, mean, like a Soren, if you will. Saren Soren. Like a Aryan supremacist vibe.
No,
right?
I don't. No.
No?
No. Soren is a wonderful human being.
His persona.
Yeah, the character of Soren. Yes, he is the character of Soren. I totally agree. Absolutely. He gets a little one note in that way. Forgive me, you're right. Can I ask you some key like decisions that you made? I made a list of them.
See, the another thing that, oof, man, I'm just dying to cover that Telltale game, and I won't say which, but...
Yeah.
You know how they parse out and tell you what decisions you made compared to other people's in the
yes.
world. I think that's so they give you exactly what you want out of these decision tree things. But anyway, go ahead.
I agree.
Analog version.
That's one of the things that Telltale did that it should be in every game. Like that's like giving you a percentage of decision tree is huge. They should be doing that all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So my first question is, and it's fundamental. Were you a renegade this time or a paragon? Did you go good or evil in this run?
Oh, I'm always paragon.
Okay.
I don't think I've done a renegade.
Okay. I did both. Okay. I did renegade this time and I did paragon the first time. Renegade is deeply hilarious. Things that happen are very funny because, especially if you do the male shepherd who looks like a complete psychopath, Like their standard default white male with the laser eyes. It's very funny. I can't recommend it enough. Go full renegade, everybody. You'll have a great time.
I never do that in Fallout either. You know what's interesting? I get so... In these games where the story really does feel rich and the world is lived in,
totally.
I get so empathetically involved that it feels bad to me to be mean and evil, so I don't. It's not funny because it feels bad, but I do love watching evil runs or like the concept of evil runs, but it hurts me to do them.
I could never do a first run of a game with this binary moral system that was evil. Like that doesn't appeal to me. It appeals to me more as what's it like on the other side? Because now I know what happens.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So material.
Yeah. That part's
I will
really
do a dumb run. Fallout has a thing where if your intelligence is under 3, all the dialogue's completely different. And that's always good for a laugh.
Oh, I bet that's really fun. Yeah. Okay, so did you save Rex, or did Rex die on your game?
Is Rex the
Krogan
guy? I saved him. I actually reloaded over and over until I finally did the right sequence of things to save him. Most of the options killed him.
Right, that's actually a complaint of mine. It's actually not that easy to save Rex.
No, it's pretty easy to let him get shot.
And like Rex is one of the 3 best characters in this franchise, I would say. Like knowing how 3 turns out, with like whichever way you go on 3, it's like, man, you don't want to fucking kill this guy, and they make it really easy to. And that's I don't know about that. Did you save?
Oh, meaning with just for the clarity of the listener, the way these games work, he would be missing from
the rest is of missing. Yeah, if he dies there, he's not in the game. Instead, his interactions are covered by his brother, who's just not the same character.
Yeah.
Like, he's a little more of a standard Krogan, which is fine, but not great. Because Rex ends up being sort of a counterpoint to almost everything that you learn about the Krogans. Mm-hmm. And it's great. You know, he's really good for that. Did you save the colony after killing the Thorian, or did you shut it down?
Shut it down.
I did too. I didn't have any compassion for that colony, and I don't know what it is. Maybe because it's a pain in the ass.
If I were in the Trek universe, I would break the Prime Directive constantly because I'm like, I don't give a fuck about these people.
It's true.
This is a made up civilization I just encountered randomly in deep space. Who cares?
And yet you believe that we're going to evolve into the stars without conflict.
Well, yeah.
And yet here you are.
They'll be better. The future people will be better than me. That's the whole point. They'll have better instincts.
They're going to judge your ass is what's going to happen. They're going to judge you
hard. I also love thinking about what in 100 years when they look back will be like unthinkably evil.
Yeah, we'll be monsters. Yeah, we'll be monsters. I don't know how, but we will be. Did you spare the Rachni Queen?
I don't even remember what that one is, dude.
Okay. So, this was my favorite subplot of this. Okay. So,
if you describe it, I'll remember.
Yeah. So there's a spider-ish race called the Rachni that were you know, basically like sort of like the Krogan, like destroying everything, and they were eliminated by the Council, or so we believed, and then we discover that no, there's one that's left alive, and she's sentient, and so you have this conversation like, please don't kill me, like we're not gonna do the thing that we did in the past, like, and you have a decision: can you wipe out the Rachni once and for all, or do you let her live? You know,
obviously, I let her live because I've read Speaker for the Dead in the Ender's Game series.
Of course, I did kill her this time.
Ooh.
And I tell you what, that one sat real bad for me.
He's a renegade.
I was not happy with myself about it.
That's what I mean, is you genuinely don't feel good sometimes when you do these evil decisions.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know if that was what it's like watching a sad movie.
When we cover Mass Effect 3, man, I want to talk at some length about this. Because I did a Renegade's run through, Renegade, but I called it Renegade's. Renegade run through Mass Effect 3.
Through the whole saga.
And it was, dude, there were some moments that were just exquisitely painful. Anyway. Last, did you save Caden or Ashley?
I also don't recall.
So that actually highlights a critique that I had, which is that choice doesn't mean that much because they're both so one note.
You know what I did?
Yeah.
The reason I can't recall is that I did one, I reloaded the save, I did the other, I realized they didn't matter, and I just kept going with the one I had. But I saw both, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. I think I only saved Ashley because I believed she might be a romantic partner in future installments.
Sure.
Which is monstrous.
Gotta save the one you might bone later.
that's really all
Put
it is.
Put you over here.
Yeah, exactly. Man, what a monster. I had a couple other little jokes I wanted to throw at you, if you don't mind. I think the idea of the Council naming their investigative unit Spectre tells you how incompetent this Council is from
the
minute
baddies.
One. Right. Yeah. It's like, Spectre? How would they ever trust you, bro? Like, what are you doing? Also, Spectres have literally no jurisdiction. They are like demigods wandering the solar system and can decide anything they want to decide. It's like, well, they're a fucking Spectre, right?
Yeah, like they can tell a civilization, like, no, you are the chief now. And they're like, all right, you heard the Spectre.
You heard you got to do
like,
that.
Like, you eat here now, hamburgers eat you now. You're like, all right, man. Sure.
Yeah.
It's your world. We're just floating in it.
Yeah, that exactly. There is nothing I want more as a fan of this franchise in all of video games than an all Elcor spinoff game, preferably something that's like a noir or a rom-com where they have to sit there and explain what emotion they're saying things in and still do these very emotional genres, man. That would thrill me. Play a rom-com as a fucking Elcor. Sign me up. I'm way in on that shit.
Yeah.
Did you sex egg? Did you do the sex egg?
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a woman in Asari who's like a sex therapist type. Because mm-hmm. Asari have these like magic powers that are like part psychic healing. Wait.
At the Citadel?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
I hit everything I could hit, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to be sex egg buddies, which we are. Yep. That's it. Those are all my observations.
We're Eskimo brothers. I'm going to put my stuff on the other side of the break because it's about that time, but I do have a few closing thoughts. So let's do that. And zip!
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
Biz, we're back.
We're back.
And just a few final thoughts before we get into our last segment. I thought it was kind of, again, looking through modern eyes, it's interesting that they made no attempt to have an actual space piloting or dogfighting component. And of course, I understand, you build one thing at a time, you walk before you can run. But now that we have these all-in-one packages, like a No Man's Sky or a Starfield, it is interestingly missing, where you're like, oh, wow, that's how old the game is that flying through space is just click on this node and then get an animation, and then you're there, right? It's just a spreadsheet.
I agree with that critique, but I object strenuously to the label of No Man's Sky as an all-in-one package. But please continue.
I guess I only mean that, I'm not arguing that it does those elements well, and that's a whole other podcast, but I'm saying it does have space flight, dogfighting, combat, and dialogue. It's just not nearly as robust at every level, you know what I mean? I guess it's just interesting to me, because back to the earliest one of these I can ever remember, and by one of these I mean there's a combat element, but you're primarily exploring space and building out a map of the universe and meeting alien races. Star Trek game. Like, the earliest one of those I was obsessed with was a Mac game called Escape Velocity. And even that, you actually flew the ship, you know what I mean? And that was just like dots on a grid. And you still flew the ship, and it had simulated gravity, and you locked into orbit, and then you landed. And then and Starflight on the Genesis had the same deal. So I actually thought it was an interesting omission, when there's much older games that have had, like, you land on the planet, you take off from the planet, that they just went, no, it's just a spreadsheet. What we care about is just the 1-2 punch of combat and story. And I honestly think that I would have liked, I like the trio. I think it's a good Neapolitan combat story and flying. I like that better, which is not even a knock against Mass Effect. It's like, I'm glad we've developed further to, you know.
Agreed. Especially because they gave us land traversal. So like they did see the problem you're pointing mm-hmm. to, but they chose the wrong path and they never fixed it. Like it never got any better in the subsequent Mass Effects.
So we didn't mention Seth Green as Joker, Keith David as Anderson. A lot of great voice acting.
That was great. Yeah, I love that.
I noticed the first dead body you find on the first mission is named Richard Jenkins, so another great character actor in the mix.
That's fun. Yeah.
And last but not least, there's a planet called Nausicaa, which if you're unaware, there's also a planet called Nausicaa in TNG, and both are a reference to Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, a great Miyazaki movie and manga that y'all should read slash watch.
Oh, that's okay, really I'm cool. Out. I love that. I love that. Well, we came with trivia this time, and I like that. So shall we pass our final checkpoint and hit the keep or delete button?
Sure. Let's hop our Mako clumsily up a ridge through sheer force of will and into a checkpoint. Which means it's time to decide if Mass Effect makes it onto our celestial hard drive. And I think it depends on your criteria because I'm at a crossroads here. Oh. I said I didn't have fun with it, but it's a very important game on a lot of levels that is like the petri dish that then spawned things that I do think are very, very worthwhile, like, you know, a bunch of the games we mentioned. And like Doom. Like I thought the... it was striking to me how much the Normandy reminded me of a proto version of the floating dude satellite from Doom Eternal.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah,
where you're like, this was one of the first time in a modern space game where I was like chilling in my home base with my homies, unlocking parts of the ship and being like, my home base is actually kind of cool to just be in. So damn, it has a lot going for it. Can I hear your answer first?
Yeah, so, well, my debating point is that we talked about on that hard drive episode not presuming on the result of a future one-upsmanship when we make this decision. So, like, which Correct. Means we're trying to make this decision in a vacuum. There's another pun. That's the journey we're on.
So you could make it and then bump it later for two or three.
I could.
Want. That's acceptable.
Yeah, I could do that. I absolutely could do that. I'm going to delete it because I know that I would delete it if it was the only one still, because there are other games that I can think of that everything about this has been done somewhere else better, even though it may have been first.
Right.
That's my main argument, and I just don't think a game should have as many frustrating pieces to it. We could have talked for the whole hour about disappointment, but we didn't want to be jerks, right?
Right.
I think that just means, this isn't the one to keep. Ooh, it's, dynamic, it's still excellent.
Dynamic B-plot character-driven dialogue scenes that happen depending on what combinations of people you have in your group at the time is such a good idea.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, exactly. There are a lot of like key pieces that people took from it, but like I still think one of the ingredients to a game being important and good is that I still have to go back and enjoy playing it, and it honestly it felt mostly like a chore to me, right? Like it was about 30 hours or 25 hours, and I was like, okay, I want to get through this so I can play the other two, which I enjoyed much more.
You know
so
what? I'm gonna delete it. It's going to make me confident to delete it. And the final nail in the coffin for me is that I can think of a very specific game. So I was like, but it's kind of a state of the industry showcase, right? Because it had a big budget at the time and it was sort of showing off these new ideas and gameplay and these new technologies. Doesn't it deserve credit for that, even if it's not fun? But off the top of my head, I can think of a game that is also what I just said and I just replayed. And I'm not going to spoil it because we're going to go for it soon. But and it was intensely fun from beginning to end. So like these old games can still be fun.
They often
one is.
They often do.
Like, they often really are great, still fun.
The really great ones that belong on a hard drive also are still fun usually.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not looking forward to and saying this one's going to go on for sure. But I know that I'll be more inclined to keep either of the next two Mass Effects or really any of the next three Mass Effects than this one.
Really?
Yeah, I would be.
You're an Andromeda man. I mean, I know that famously got bad reviews.
I would keep Andromeda over Mass Effect 1, believe it or not. I would.
I actually I liked Andromeda more than people were shitting on it at the time, yeah.
I think that was an overreaction based on the disappointment they felt about how 3 ended.
And more the facial animations were objectively like, bad. People liked dunking on it.
Okay, neat. But also, like, come on. You know, like, yeah.
Fallout has that problem, too. All right. Yeah. Yeah, like, imagine one of these games with L.A. Noir style or facial, or, like, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn facial animation.
That's why I'm so excited that they're still making them. I would normally be like, well, I don't know that we need more Mass Effect. Like, I think you did it. But I don't think we've actually seen what Mass Effect could be if the tech really matched the ambition. Like, I'd like to see that game.
That's true.
You know? So I'm excited about that.
The hard drive stays at whatever it was at.
Forget about it. It's Milky Way Town.
That's better. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Introed by Swaim, outroed by the Renegans. Pew, pew, pew.
Zip.
Should we fly off into the sunset?
Oh, I'm already... Joker's already booting up my engines, bro.
All right. Well, where should people go if they want to hear more of our shiz?
Thanks for asking. So we do several other podcasts, even some together, on a Patreon that you can feel free to browse. It's called patreon.com/smallbeans. We do podcasts about movies. We do podcasts about the art of directing, about the effects of depression on your experience, about science, about dinosaurs, about so many things that you will love and enjoy. Please skip on over there if you enjoyed this, and feel free to toss us a buck or two if you like what we've done. We'd sure be grateful to have it. Thanks again for listening to One Upsmanship. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you, right around the Milky Way.
Work complete.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Thinking about gas mileage. A bottle of Lucas Complete Fuel Treatment can clean your system and help your engine get more MPGs. Right now, you can get two bottles for only $9.99. A great deal to help you go a great deal farther. Find Lucas Complete Fuel Treatment and everything you need for better fuel efficiency at any one of our 6,300 stores.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.